Today we have on Sky King. You had an early career as a marketing and digital marketing specialist. You were a podcast host at Creator of Curiosity, which we'll talk about more. You did a brief stint as in marketing roles at Onnit and Aubrey Marcus. And then you decided to start your own company called Modern Stoa, where you're the founder and current CEO. You've worked with brands like Chris Williamson, other big podcasters, and your goal is to help podcasters sell ads and get better monetization. You're also the podcast host at Sky King's Mental Playground. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, bro.
You have this quote on your podcast: "The role of my life is to build systems that increase the opportunity for media incentives to lead to outcomes that society would benefit from." Can you briefly explain what that is and what's the goal?
I don't know if I can briefly explain it, but it is the fundamental goal of my life. It's the most important thing for me.
Why did you decide to go the behind a paywall route versus distribute to?
I originally launched it actually as an NFT because I think NFTs are potentially the best technology we have to monetize media more directly. It started as an experiment. The reason I stopped Curiosity because I started working for Aubrey Marcus and I was working 60 to 80 hours a week and I just didn't have time to do it. So I was like, okay, I have this vision for what I want the world to be, to the quote you said at the beginning, let's try some shit. And it worked. It did super well. I would say my listener to revenue on my first episode ever was there's nobody higher than that.
Nice.
Yeah. It was insane. And then I...
Welcome to Funds and Founders. This weekly show is tailored for Austin founders navigating the early stages of their entrepreneurial journey. I'm your host and fellow Austinite, Abhinav Sinha. If you're looking for the motivation and the insight needed to build a successful company, you're in the right place. Today we have on Sky King. You had an early career as a marketing and digital marketing specialist. You were a podcast host at Creator of Curiosity, which we'll talk about more. You did a brief stint as in marketing roles at Onnit and Aubrey Marcus. And then you decided to start your own company called Modern Stoa, where you're the founder and current CEO. You've worked with brands like Chris Williamson, other big podcasters, and your goal is to help podcasters sell ads and get better monetization. You're also the podcast host at Sky King's Mental Playground. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, bro.
You have this quote on your podcast: "The role of my life is to build systems that increase the opportunity for media incentives to lead to outcomes that society would benefit from." Can you briefly explain what that is and what's the goal with your podcast?
I don't know if I can briefly explain it, but it is the fundamental goal of my life. It's the most important thing to me. Is it okay if I'm not brief in this? My father, he leveraged capitalism to help his wife at the time, Billie Jean King, have a place in society. And he saw that I'm a capitalist for sure. And because I witnessed what you can change the world through capitalism. So my whole life I was looking what do I want to fix in the world? That is the most important thing that I have the skills to do, because that's what he did. He literally, women's tennis players today get paid equal to men's. And my dad built that. And I was flying back and forth between Indianapolis and New York twice a week. I was working for a big pharma company and they'd ship me out to another big pharma company to do know how to build websites and do social media and stuff. And it was during the 2015 election. And I was so confused why in New York, Trump was on everybody's mind. He rented space in everybody's heads. But in Indiana, which is a conservative state, he wasn't really relevant. It wasn't a thing. Podcasting, I felt had the most sincerity in media. And I was oh shit, this is a big deal. So I emailed Ryan Holiday and he basically sent me 10 books to read. And I just got super deep on the industry of advertising. And I realized that our entire sense-making apparatus is being controlled by people who have different incentives than we do. And this happened in 1941. Henry Luce, the founder of Time, Inc. and Fortune magazine, met with FDR, and they basically executive actioned a tax break for all advertising. It used to be something you had to pay out of profit. Then it became out of revenue. It was part of R&D in the tax code at that time. It's obviously changed. And 10 years later, we increased spend on advertising by $9.8 billion in 1951 terms. It's about $130 billion today. Cigarettes, we knew they were bad for us. We knew tobacco was killing us. We stopped talking about it completely for 30 years. And we estimate 20 million people died because of that, because the incentive structure wasn't correct. And I think media should be paid for. And so I look at my guiding light is how do we make media paid for with new technology, new ideas, new systems?
When you say media be paid for, are you talking about on the consumption side or are you talking about on the creation and...
Consumption side. And I don't think we're going to beat Facebook with Patreon, right? Like, we're not going to. And they've already been subsidized. Like, this is the system. So in my mind, what this actually starts to look like is how do we make it fun? For me, when I think about any kind of content or any kind of monetization of content, how do I make it fun or addictive? Like, fun addictive. That is the stuff that, like, I'm really thinking about a lot these days.
Going on that thought, you had your older podcast called...
Yeah, Curiosity, bro.
Yeah.
I was not ready for you to bring that up. Yeah.
No, so not that as much, but what's the biggest difference in what you did then versus what you're trying to do with Sky King's Mental Playground?
Yeah, so I started that so I could get into podcasting because I wanted to meet a chef. That was the Kanye of Indianapolis, as I refer to him. Jonathan Brooks, shout out. What up, boy? I realized, like, the things that bring me the most joy. One, I realized that podcasting is more sincere. Cool, I need to get into podcasting. I was working in big pharma. I was doing global branding, global pricing, big boy job, big boy pants, MBA track, like, only sending to top, like, 5 schools. And I was like, I fucking hate this. I was like, I want to get into podcasting. And I thought the best way to do anything is to start doing it. So I just started doing it. I actually got, like, a ton of views for that. And it was this idea that it was rolling off of that experience of going back and forth, because now I was full-time in indie again at this point, and seeing what had happened. And I was like, what I think is undervalued are middle American cities. And, like, honestly, I got lucky with COVID, right? Because, like, that's proven to be true from Austin to Miami to Boise to Indianapolis. Like, they all pumped during these time periods. But it was these things that, like, quality of life is incredibly high. There's tons of creators there, but there's no scene there. There's no, like, culture there. And so I was like, curiosity. It was like curious about middle American cities.
And it feels like everyone's in their own bubbles doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Versus when you go to a place like New York, SF, Austin, there's a vibe, like you're referring to, where you want to go out and meet people. There's people trying to collaborate. There's a lot of, like, hey, let me come on this. Let me go there.
Yeah. And that didn't exist in Austin when I moved here either.
When did you move to Austin?
2018.
Okay. Yeah, I've been here since 2016, and I keep telling people that after COVID is a very different kind of Austin than when I was at UT.
Yeah.
A lot smaller. There's not as much stuff happening.
Yeah.
It's growing, but it was growing in a different way than it's growing.
Definitely. Right now. Yeah. The one thing I think holds true through Austin, and my friend Paul Millard talks about this a lot, is Austin is a city of underemployed people. Like, the Keep Austin Weird thing, like, that was actually about, like, 60s, 70s. It was all musicians who worked part-time at bars. But you could still hit somebody up on, like, a Tuesday at 2 p.m. and go to Barton. And that's still true today. Now it's just comedians, podcasters, health coaches, and tech sales, which, like, tech sales is, before the, like, the Zerp era, it was, like, basically you don't have a job, right? Yeah, it was, like, way chill.
So what are you doing differently on Sky King's Mental Playground? And why did you decide to go the behind a paywall route versus distribute to?
Yeah, so I originally launched it actually as an NFT because I think NFTs are potentially the best technology we have to monetize media more directly. And so it started as an experiment. The reason I stopped Curiosity because I started working for Aubrey Marcus and I was working like 60 to 80 hours a week and I just didn't have time to do it. So I was like, okay, I have this vision for what I want the world to be, to the quote you said at the beginning, let's try some shit. And it worked. It did super well. Like, I would say, like, my listener to revenue on my first episode ever was, like, there's nobody higher than that.
Nice.
Yeah. Like, it was, like, insane. And then I had a bit of, like, a rough patch internally. And so this year, I basically was like, you know what? I'm just going to go full-time on my podcast. This is, like, what I love. I love talking to people. And I love being curious. And so the differences here is, like, I chose a different niche. It was more about the problem I'm actually most passionate about. And that's what I talk about, what I focus on. And about, like, testing solutions to do that. So even, like, a private feed is a solution to do that. And again, we're not going to beat Facebook with Patreon or Substack or what I'm using, which is Supercast. My goal with this is basically to get 10,000 people paying me to listen that, like, fuck with this ideology. And then we can build companies together.
Makes sense. Yeah. So a contrarian take, right? You started Modern Stoa, which is a company that helps podcasters get ads and monetize and find ways to monetize.
Yeah.
Why go this route of putting your podcast behind a paywall? You're not doing traditional ad sales. You're not sort of selling sponsorship. And how does that coincide with the work you're doing at Modern Stoa? And why do, I don't want to say a flip, but why go the other way? And
yeah, so I got into podcasting to do more of what I'm doing now. The reason I chose to go into the ad sales part is because I saw an opportunity where I could be the person who represents the podcaster. Okay. And so when the brands, like the thing that like is the thing that bothers me the most in society is that we have a third party deciding what is truth, what we can agree on as a society. Those are the advertisers. Because the advertisers are the customer of media. We're the consumer and the product. They're the customer because they're paying for it. And so I was working for Aubrey and I was basically like, Aubrey, some people would call him controversial. I personally wouldn't, but advertisers would come to me and try and influence what we would say. And I'd tell them to fuck off. And to me, that was like, this is so important because how many other people are growing really fast and they're just listening to what the advertiser says. And if you have views, they'll still buy. They can't choose who the guests are. They can't choose what we talk about. And like, so I think of ourselves as a moat between the advertiser and the audience of the podcast. And I'm here to like not even let the podcaster decide because I don't want them to be self-censoring.
Makes sense.
Even when I disagree with them, like I disagree with most of my clients, honestly, like because of this like model, I feel like I have a fat like right wing like conspiracy theorist that's like derogatory, but like right wing people I represent that I like, don't agree with mostly at all, but I will defend their right to say it because I think it's so important. 100%. And I don't want to let them influence it. And so that's how I kind of live in those two worlds.
Makes sense. On the advertisement side, what is something that you're doing a little differently on Modern Stoa besides playing that mode between the podcaster and brands? Yeah. What else do you do in this relationship? And what do podcasters traditionally, I don't want to say get wrong, but enter this space without knowing?
Most people who have a business like I do, they represent the brands, not the podcaster. So I'm always podcaster first, which makes me less money, to be honest. Two is like, I've been in social media marketing since like 2011, like worked with influencers. And I just have a very good sense for what they don't want. And what that is time. So like everything that like I've systematized my culture and my company to do is to save time for the podcaster. And that's like the massive value add because like being in a room with someone recording ads, it looks good like when it's on the video, but they fucking hate doing it. And so we go from all the admin. So there's the sales part, right? That's important, obviously, like negotiating like as well as we can. But there's like a huge thing we offer is just the admin, like from invoicing to script writing, to product being sent, delivered, like my team just handles all of that.
And so you said that you make sure the podcaster is not being censored, is talking to the audience the way they want. So are you also working to get sign off on both sides? So brand A comes, they want to say a certain thing. Do you push back and like, hey, no, this is not how we're going to do this. And you define the terms of that relationship?
100%. Yeah, it gets way more challenging as people get larger because there's this, honestly, in podcasting, there's very few brands that will sponsor, will pay, you know, 25, 50, 100K for an ad. But yeah, it's funny because like for most of the relationships with brands that I have with like my big clients, like they don't like me that much.
But
it makes the money, but like they don't like working with me because I'm kind of a, like, I'm very intense about it.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And the reason I ask is, coming from the startup space, it's one of those things where a lot of founders let VCs, investors drive the relationship. Yep. They're like, hey, you're writing me the check. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got to say what you do.
Yeah.
It's very hard for people to get out of that and, like you said, define who your audience is, what your voice is, and push back because you're scared, hey, the sponsor is probably going to back out. And so how do you help bridge that, or is that not even an issue here because you're working with bigger podcasters? So it's easier
It's definitely an issue, man. This is the, to the fundamental thing. Like as long as the customer is not the listener, you're always going to deal with that. Like it's just misaligned incentives.
Yeah.
I have my clients' best interests at heart. I just try to help them think long-term. I don't know if that's answering the question, but like I basically just try to be like, look, what is more important now or later? And like I just hold that. And hold that space with the podcaster, like, or with the brand. For me, it's like, oh, if you want to say this on an ad read or not, like, that's just like minute details. The times where it's really challenging is when they're like, oh, you had this guest on, like, we can't be on that episode. And I'd be like, you can't be on any episode then, like, fuck off. Like, that's the time period where it's actually a lot more challenging. And funny enough, like, the person who has actually made me have to walk this talk the most is RFK Jr. And this is before he ran for president.
And it's because brands didn't want to associate with
He had such that a bad public image at the time, yeah.
Representing the podcaster's best interest in heart,
yeah.
How do you then go select and find the right brands? Because that's also in itself a different challenge, right?
Yeah, for and sure. Yeah.
Also within that, there's multiple categories, right? Yeah. There's SaaS, there's DD, there's products versus services. How do you pick and choose, and how do you figure out what's the best fit for your set of clients?
Yeah. So again, going back to pharma, like I learned a lot about market research and how to think about the audience. So we basically kind of go through and it's like gut test, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. Then second test would be like, what percentage of my audience would actually benefit from this? Is it valuable to them? So like, again, you have like an audience makeup. So we can use like JP Sears as an example. So JP, his audience is a lot more like kind of conservative. And so it's like, okay, cool. There is a company that does American-made American products. It's like Thrive Market for American products. That is such an obvious yes for JP, because that's what his audience wants. The way I view marketing in general, and I think marketing and advertising are completely different, by the way, but the goal of the marketer, and it's in the word, it's like they're a market maker. They're the person who finds the person who wants the product and connects them with them. So very roundabout way to get to your answer. But it really is just like understanding the audience, doing gut test. Would I use this product? Like when I start a new client, first question I ask is, what brands do you use? What do you actually like? Because again, we're honing towards sincerity in media.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
How do you figure out what the audience would like? Because my understanding, and correct me if this is wrong, in the podcasting space, it's really hard to truly map out who my audience is,
mm-hmm.
because there's just a lack of data. There's no Google Analytics for podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
I can get age range. I can get male versus female. I can get at the most countries by IP, and that also may not be accurate.
Yeah.
So how do you figure out, hey, someone who has 2, 3, 4 million subscribers, they're getting 800,000-900,000 downloads an episode. How do you truly know who their audience is? And how are you gut checking that from the ads and sales side? Because sometimes it's just when I see who shows up to a fan meetup, it just mind blows me in terms of, I didn't think you would have been the audience for this person or whatever. So how do you bridge those two gaps? Because coming from a SaaS world, I think there is a lack of some technology here to truly map out an audience, mm-hmm. which limits availability for both ads and what my reach is. But do you have a system? Do you have, or am I just incorrect in that this is not?
So I think that's one thing I'm uniquely skilled at, is I have an intuition around it. I think I've just built a lot of data in my head. But I have been trying to train my COO, who's taking over the company next quarter, how to do this. And so when I think about my process, it's basically, one, I have an intuition. Usually, like, none of my clients or people are not my friends, or I haven't like spent a lot of time listening to. So I can do like N of one. But also, like, I tend to look at, if you're a podcaster, this is like a great hack to understand who your audience is. When you have a guest on that's talking about a specific subject and you look at like from Lisbon to Anchor, you see something like pump and then go down like on a specific episode. That's a signal like that your 1,000 true fans exist within that topic. The people who are going to convert, they're going to buy, they exist within that topic. And so watching that volatility and recognizing that is the moment, like, oh shit. So like I'll go through data and it's like, okay, cool. We know, use JP as an example. Like, so we did this like huge Liver King video recently. It's like, we can see when JP talks about these topics or talks about meat or primal stuff that it's like pumping versus when he talks about like lockdowns. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you can start to see that. And that's like, it's just a signal. It's very much an art, not a science, I would say, but trying to train somebody on this is challenging. Like, I was on the phone with David, the COO, today, and he's like, what do we think Roseanne Barr will do on JP? And I was like, okay. So then I like verbally said out loud basically what I said to you. It's like, these are the topics that hit with her. These are the topics that she, like, larger audience, smaller audience, like, doesn't get viral. So this is like the estimate we're going to do. And it's similar with brands. It's the same thing. It's just like, basically what you have to do is just triangulate like 30 different data points.
And do you have a system outside of intuition and gut checking to build sort of these data points, get into one place and figure out, hey, how well or how not well an episode's going to do?
It's really just like, okay, so if we're looking at Chris, like what we do is I'll basically be like, okay, this is the guest, X person. What other podcasts have they been on? I'll search YouTube, find out how well those podcasts have done within the last year. Look at the audience size of those. Assume like 1/3 for audio and then create estimations out of it.
Got it.
So it's, again, it's very much an art, but it's like, I'm just looking at how well the algorithm's reacting to this person. With Chris's like amplifier, how we can assume stuff. And then I basically have to like make those numbers up from that and then sell the ads on it.
Going back to the agency brands, I think we're briefly talking about this outside. What is something that brands get wrong with podcast advertising and marketing or advertising in the podcast space?
It's crazy because I come from brand marketing with like big pharma budgets, right? It's different. And like in the VC world, tech world, kind of like new startup world, we focus on performance marketing.
Yeah.
Like so much, right? You need like a return on ad spend.
It's all about how much for every dollar I put in, how much can I get back?
Yeah. And it's like, it's so funny because it's so short-sighted and actually inaccurate because most people are doing this off of paid ads, which is like, if we use Facebook, for example, you have to actually go in and manually decrease the amount that Facebook will contribute to their conversion because it's not accurate. It's like, if they saw my ad in the last 30 days and converted, it's 100% attribution. It's more like 30% tops. Podcasting, we're in the reverse space because we don't have these pixels. We don't have this stuff. And so the thing that brands get wrong is they're looking for like a 1-to-1 or a 1.5-to-1 or a 2-to-1 return. And you will get that through podcast ads, but it won't be attributed to that because it's both a brand and a performance marketing play. What's crazy is like, unless you have a novel offer as a brand, nobody's going to click the fucking link. They'll buy it later because like they know that Kyle Kingsbury likes a cereal. They'll buy it later, but they won't click the link because they're listening to a podcast.
Yeah.
So like I've done some studies where we did exit surveys and we literally saw like 12-to-1 return on ad spend from exit surveys, whereas people used the code and actually bought it, not where they heard about it from. Because it wasn't a novel offer. It was like 10% off. The worst thing you can do is like 10% off. It was like a 0.5. So it's like 24x better performance than what they saw from the direct like performance marketing data. And that's what you're buying when you're buying a podcast ad is you're buying the attention of the audience. And that is insanely valuable from someone they trust. Because when you're a podcaster, and if you're like Chris, who does 3 episodes a week, like people listen to Chris every week, every episode. They spend more time with Chris than they do with like their fucking mom.
100%.
So like that value is so insane. So the thing that brands get wrong is they look for the wrong multiplier. Like the brands I like working with the best have the best relationships with. Take Element, for example. Element's multiplier is 0.75. And that's one, they get way better placement. They get all the stuff they want. They're the easiest to work with. I fucking love them. I'll do anything for them. They have a great product. And they are reasonable about how this business works.
And we were talking about this. How should a brand think about return here or lift here? So you mentioned it. It's more of a long play. It's not a short play, right? So how should a brand trying to do podcast ads think about doing ads? How should they pick a podcaster? And how should they structure their ad spend so that they get the best bang for buck?
For sure. So if I was like in the brand position, what I would do, I would actually look smaller rather than larger unless they're going for a pure brand plan. I would find podcasters talking about topics that are like within a Venn diagram, like 1 degree away from what I'm interested in. You could probably find 500 podcasts that have like 1,000 listeners a piece and go in and sponsor those because you can convert like crazy. Because again, the people that listen to Chris, they talk to more than their mom. Even the 1,000 people who listen to a small podcast, they also talk to that person more than their mom. And it's like so undervalued. It's so cheap because they don't even have a big enough audience to do ads. But you can convert like 500 people off of somebody who gets 1,000 downloads on every episode because it's like niche, small, specific. And so like if I was giving like a brand advice to that, I would say like do a lot of research, go big on small podcasts.
How should one discover and understand what that podcast audience is.
Yeah.
Great. I've done the research. I've found the podcast. You know, I think these topics are what I want to be associated with. How do I determine whether the audience is the right audience? Because again, there's nothing for me to look at. Even if I make a deal with the podcaster, I don't know if that's the audience which matches my ICP.
So what I would do if I was the brand is I would do market research on current clients, what podcasts they listen to.
Got it.
And I would pick the smaller ones.
Okay, got it.
Because then you're building like a persona based on what they're listening to, where their ears are at, where their attention is.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Quick tangent on this. I was listening to a podcast the other day and they talked about how there's not a lot of consumption available for podcasts. In the last 3 to 4 years, podcasts have grown a lot. There's a lot of podcasts. But if you think about who's consuming a podcast, a heavy consumer probably listens to 3 to 5 podcasts and you're fighting for a top slot. Mm-hmm. If it's not a heavy podcast consumer, then maybe they listen to one odd episode here or there. Then it's more topical. It's not about the podcaster per se. It's more about, hey, what's the discussion going on?
Yeah.
How should podcasters think about what mind space they're gathering? And are you gunning for mass? Are you gunning for super niche? I only want these 500,000 people. Sort of long-winded question, but how should they think about entering the market?
This person, what is their goal? Define a goal because it'll change how I answer it.
No, so it's more the question comes from podcast production and putting something out there costs a certain amount of money.
Yeah.
And so there's a per episode cost, whether it's time, money, production, editing, whatever. Personally, for me, I'm doing the podcast to build better relationships, to have meaningful conversations. And hopefully from each episode, someone listening will get one or two tidbits out of it. And I have a whole thesis behind why I picked this topic of journeys of building, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, I'm going to want to try to get more traction, more reach, more eyeballs. And at that point, I feel like I'm competing against hundreds and thousands of episodes.
Yeah.
How do I think about that?
It's challenging, mate, because like, and I don't mean this offensively, you will never do a better episode than Rogan.
Yeah.
Nor will I.
Yeah.
And he has 4,000 episodes, 2,500, I forget how many episodes, you know, and there's a back catalog you're competing against too, right?
And he also has 12 years in a game that other people are just starting out.
Yeah.
Right? Like, for I'm sure. probably 25 episodes in, I'm nowhere.
We can't compete with that. So the best way to compete in anything, so just like, it's just to be different, be uniquely yourself. Somebody asked me at some event, actually I was at the event before we talked at Nick's event. And he was like, how do I become like a professional comedian? And I said, be great at what you do and move to Paris. Because I think of Austin as like Paris in the 20s. Because all you can do is just be uniquely yourself. And this is like very Navalian, I guess, but it's literally like, think about your internal skill set and your goal and how do I achieve it. So like I've, with my podcast with Sky King's Mental Playground, I've approached it very specifically. I want no more than 10,000 subscribers because I don't want to be famous. I grew up with famous people. It sucks. It's even annoying. Like in my current work, like having to be talked to by so many people, not me, but like the people I'm with are always being interrupted, always talked to. And I'm like, this sucks. It's super annoying. Once you get past the ego, like, oh, that was cool. Now it sucks. So I set a specific goal. What do I want to learn about? I think this is why I love podcasting so much is because Ferris, Rogan, even Serial, I would say, like set the tone of what grows here is by people being interestingly themselves. And so there's no like hack, there's no nothing you can do. It's just like follow your curiosity, be yourself, and do it in public. Theo Von had a carny. They didn't even say his name. It was just a carny on his podcast. I promise you, that was one of the top downloaded podcasts last week, a carny, because people fell in love with Theo.
100%.
And the more you do it, the more you're yourself, the more that you can do, the only thing that you can do, the better that your podcast becomes. My friend asked me, like, if you had to create a female Joe Rogan, what would you do? And I was literally like, that question does not compute. It's like, what is she curious about? It's not something that we should try to architect. It is art.
100%. And I think it comes back to some things you were saying initially, which was there's a certain sincerity in podcasts. There's a certain authenticity in podcasts, right? And I think even if there's thousands, millions of podcasts, there's a certain voice people resonate with and they'll go back to their voice. Doesn't matter whether it's 10 people listening, 20 people listening, or hundreds of thousands of people listening, it's a certain voice, a vibe, and a sincerity that after is, like you said, Theo Von. Like, you like the Theo Von dynamic with whoever he brings on, right? Someone I listen to a lot is Bobby Lee. I don't know anything about comedy.
Yeah.
But after COVID, I started following a bunch of stuff. My wife hates him because she's like, he's very vulgar comic. But I'm like, it's a show, it's an act, and it's just a certain vibe he brings that I just really like for whatever reason. I don't know why, but I enjoy that vibe.
No, it's the soundtrack to your life.
Yeah.
And like, he's bringing the energy that you want to put down. And what's the one thing I do want people to realize is, like, whether it's 50 people listening or it's 1,000 people listening or it's 1,000,000 people listening, those people are spending more time with you than they do with their mom. Like, that is so actually not something to be glib about. Like, the thing I end my podcast on every single time is thank you for your attention. Because it's insane to me. I have people paying to listen, and then they listen as well. And like, if you've made it this far, like, time is all we have. Attention is all we have. Those are the most valuable resources in the world. That's what the biggest companies in the world are mining. And for you to give me that is, and I hope I reward you with something valuable. I will never underestimate that. And that's why I've helped people launch a bunch of podcasts and stuff. And I've like done like marketing for podcasts and grown podcasts and stuff. And it's so funny, no matter how big your audience gets, you're always thinking like, oh, it should be bigger. And I'm always just like, you do realize, like, I had one of my clients and I was like, you realize that like the amount of people that listen every month are the entirety of the UT stadium for a season. They listen to one episode. So, oh, it should be bigger. No, like, that is insane. That many people are going to listen to your dumbass talk for 2 hours.
And that also maintain attention throughout. Yeah.
And so valuable. It's so undervalued. We value, like, at the highest level, people's time at 0.02 cents per minute. If somebody paid you 0.02 cents per minute, like, would you take that fucking job? Nah. But we do. We're totally cool with it when we listen to ads on podcasts. Because that's how much they value your time.
Outside of putting a podcast behind a paywall, what are some other things you've thought about on how to monetize a podcast?
Hell yeah. Okay. So let's do three things. So first one is meme farming. This is my by far my favorite idea. And this is what I did to like launch the podcast NFTs. Imagine a world where when Elon smoked the blunt on Joe Rogan, we could all compete and bid to buy that meme, to own that, actually be the owner of that. And that's like a really intense example, right? But again, you go down to the 1,000 people listening and you're still the voice in their head. That community of 1,000 people, they fuck with you so hard that they would buy something too. So they could have it and the other 1,000 people couldn't. So that's what I call meme farming. Like, imagine just like thousands of people logging into a Rogan episode and just like competing, bidding on moments as it's happening live, and then being able to own that moment in history, that time, as a digital art. Prediction markets on content. If you listen to every Theo Von episode, you have a skill now, just like basketball. You can bet. I bet Theo's going to make this joke, or he's going to tell this story about his mom working for Amazon, or he's going to do this thing, and then other people can take it. And then what would happen is Theo would be like, he would get a percentage of every bet, like even a small percentage. And that would be so much easier to make money versus ads. And he wouldn't have to do anything, just be himself. The other thing is, like, there's not a good word for it. The closest thing I've heard is like quadratic funding, but I actually don't think that's the right term. It doesn't make sense as far as like quadratic formula to this, but this is something I'm working with Supercast, who hosts my podcast, to do. But it's basically like, okay, the issue with a paywall is you have zero opportunity for virality.
Yeah.
So what if we live in a world, let's say all in podcasts, Jason listens to my podcast, which is crazy.
We'll tag him on this
call. Yeah, tag him. Yeah, yeah. But imagine a world where Jason basically says, okay, I want to make 10 grand on this episode. Every listener who either wants to maybe ask a question or get it early or some sort of incentive model can donate as much money as they want. As long as they put skin in the game, they get access to the episode. The moment it hits 10 grand, it goes public. Like, even building something like that, you can make so much more money off of that than you do off of ads.
In that last situation, are you owning a piece of the episode?
No, it's just literally like you just get access. It's either like early access. So like when it gets to Saturday, I'm kind of like, where the fuck is my podcast all in, guys? Like, I know you recorded on Thursday. Like, where is it at? You know what I mean? If I could have gone on Friday, I would have listened on Friday. Like, my memes would be doper than the other memes of other people because I'm like early.
Got
it. Or it could be like Chris is interviewing Jordan Peterson, people who they know the episode's going to happen, they like pre-buy it. They get the opportunity to submit a question, and it might not be asked, it might be asked, but they get like thrown into a lottery. I can build like 1,000 different incentive structures in order to incentivize people to do that. And it honestly would be audience dependent. Because like, for example, like Ferris, like I'm not going to really like pay early for a Ferris episode because his stuff is evergreen. Whereas like All In is very today
topical
focused. Yeah.
I think Jordan Peterson was in town yesterday, right?
He was, yeah. I didn't go to the event stuff. I had stuff to do, but yeah.
No, I saw a friend win. I was like, oh, because I like the prediction market
would be so fun. That's again, it's like, how do you make it fun? That would be so fucking fun. Like I'm a degen, like NFT degen, obviously.
I'm just thinking about what kind of Reddit virality could you get to like hook users?
Yeah.
Because there's like hardcore like fans on Reddit.
Yep.
That will fight, defend, and like badmouth someone if something happens. And you said the Thea Vaughn. I think I went to a Tom Segura live show during South by 1 or 2 years ago or whenever, or during this Moon Tower. And he asked a bunch of questions and the audience was like, hey, what's this sound? When did this happen? In which episode? And like people were
it's a skill game.
And they were like throwing shirts out or whatever, right? And I think there's a group of people who resonate with certain podcasters and certain personalities that you could really monetize that off of.
Bro, it's not even that group of people, because like if you think about it, that's like who is converting on a podcast ad? It's the people that really fuck with you.
Yeah.
But instead of selling them fucking supplements and multivitamins, give them ego. Feed them what they want, which is to be seen. Like working with a lot of creators, what I've realized is like what people want is to be seen. They want time, attention, and to be seen. They don't even really want to be around you because like when they actually walk up, they're just like, we should be friends.
Yeah.
What they want is to be seen. They want to be recognized.
100%.
And you can, through like the best prediction market person, like if I had a podcast on this system with like millions of listeners, I would have my number one person on the show.
100%.
Because it's like, dude, you're so good at knowing me. This is crazy. Like, what questions do you have, bro? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I love your NFT idea as well. And something I thought about when NFTs were like popping up everywhere, right? There's a certain notion that artists, celebrities, singers want to reward their fans. Yeah. But there's no really good way to reward them. And I had this idea of, could you track someone's like history of like how many Taylor Swift shows have you been to?
Yeah, for sure.
Did you go to the shows when there were like 100 people, 150 people?
Yeah.
Can you prove that using NFT blockchain?
Yeah.
That, hey, I was there. I was in the early show. I was one of the first people who went to whatever, right? I think there is a lot you can do there because there's a lot of, I don't know if fandom is the right word, but loyalty, right?
People love being early. That's like a human desire that we have noticed. We don't monetize it at all because all you get for being early is cred for being early. You get cool points. Monetizing cool, that's like the closest thing there would be, right?
Yeah. The closest thing is become a mod of a subreddit and most of the time, the creator doesn't even care about the subreddit or the Discord, right? Like, they'll make a Discord and they'll vanish and someone's managing it for them all for free in the time, right? No, I love the prediction model idea, prediction market idea. I think there's a lot you could build on that for.
And this is the whole vibe of like my podcast. It's literally like, okay, let's build a people who believe in different business models of media. Talk about art, propaganda, edutainment. So it's entertaining, educational. You learn a lot of shit. You like art. We talk about art constantly. But also, like, I'm excited for every person that subscribes because I know they're going to be people I'm going to build companies with in the future to build this reality. Like, I'm building a jihad, to use a Dune term, because, like, they cut it out of the movie, but, like, what it's called in the actual Dune is a jihad. Like, I'm building a jihad of people who want to live in this reality so then we can build companies together. And we can actually build this reality.
When you say build companies together, like what's your goal there? What are you thinking in that perspective?
Yeah. So it would be like, again, let's say there's like 10 developers who like listen to my podcast. They start like messaging me or whatever. I go back, like they're like building little mock ideas of a prediction market on content platforms. I'm like, oh, you guys are all working on this together. Let's do that. I'll use the funds from the company to invest, like lead the seed round on this. And we'll hire a CEO, we'll get it going.
Makes sense.
It's like, how do I meme my reality into everyone else's reality? And I think if I can build, you know, 10,000 little soldiers, who I appreciate the attention of, but like, literally, it's like, okay, cool. And I'll just be organized. Like, I don't even care if I'm a part of the deal. I just want this reality to exist. And that's why I use the term jihad as well, because it's outside of the profit. Like, it's outside of the person. It's larger than them.
What's your take on having a loyal follower base, subscriber base, versus garnering attention on podcasts? And I've been seeing a lot recently where people are theorizing that followers and subscribers are not going to matter as much because people are curating feeds like YouTube, Facebook, Patreon, TikTok.
Yeah.
Everyone has a feed now, and you got to make it into the feed because the feed is going to be tuned to whoever is using it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether you're a subscriber or not. But what's your take on that sort of interesting relation where people keep saying, hey, subscribe to my podcast, subscribe, because you need the views and the clout to be able to sell ads. Mm-hmm. It's like a vicious circle. But if the follower count doesn't matter anymore, because I think this happens on TikTok where you could have 2-3 million followers, but your TikToks are not getting views because it's not showing up in anyone's feed because whatever engagement's down.
Yeah.
How do you think about that?
Yeah, this is like a challenging question for me right now because, like, okay, go back to 2011 when I was like doing social media marketing, and it was like all the talking heads were like, shorter attention, shorter attention, shorter attention. What are we doing right now?
Increase attention.
We're doing podcasting.
Yeah.
We're the most popular media outlet in the world is one dude talking for 3 hours drunkenly.
Yeah.
And so podcasting is getting a little squirrely right now because, like, nobody likes to say it, but the largest podcasting platform in the world is YouTube. Just is. Nobody likes to talk about that. But I do think algorithms are going to change. I don't even know, like, so I'm having a daughter in July. I don't even know if she's going to use technology. I don't know if she'll look at phones. I'm not trying to pattern looking at phones to her either, because I don't actually think that's where technology is going. I think it's going to be a lot more like integration / wearables. So I think the feed could be like a hyper intense phenomenon for a short period of time. But I don't know. Like, I don't know where it's going. But what I do know is that we have always sat around a campfire and talked. And the quality of that conversation is the only thing that'll drive you forward. And it's back to your question about, like, you know, if you're starting out being a podcaster, like, be yourself aggressively. I have watched podcasting destroy every single trend that was expected. Like, if I told you in 2011, just go sit and talk on a mic with no catches, no fast clips, no nothing. Like, this is when Vine came out, right? No heavy editing, like, and it's going to be the most popular thing listened to. You would have said I was crazy. So I'm just going to, like, put my faith in that and keep going.
Makes sense. You mentioned Vine. I think Musk tweeted something out this week or when the TikTok thing was announced. Vine ? And, like, people,
his Twitter,
like,
bought Vine, like, back in the day. Yeah.
They're like, is it going to come back, not come back? Random sidebar, because you mentioned Vine. And I personally don't like the push for social media to be like, hey, attention, attention. You got to optimize how this clip is cut and fast moving and do all these tactics to garner someone's attention. Because I feel like that's hooking someone on something that they don't really care about. You're just using tertiary tactics to, like, keep their eyeballs on you. Versus if someone's genuinely interested, they will listen to an episode. Like, I watch My First Million a lot. There's some episodes I don't like, but I'll fast forward through them. I'll still listen to it, try to find tidbits, because I've been listening to every episode for a while.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things where I like it. I like the content. I like the dynamic. So I listen to it. But there's so many clips where I'm like, oh, this is a good clip. But then when you go to the episode, I don't enjoy it as much. I don't enjoy the episode. Maybe I don't enjoy the character, whatever the dynamic is. What's your take on optimizing for views and clicks versus, I agree you should be yourself, but I feel like with everything going on in social media, people are incentivized to optimize for clicks and views and traction and virality versus being yourself.
It depends on the goal, mate. It depends on the goal. So if we go back fundamentally, why are we optimizing for clips? It's all because, like, the customer of Google, the customer of media are advertisers.
Yeah.
So that's the fundamental issue that I'm trying to solve, right? Because that is a bad thing. If you think about the idea of the Matrix, like the movie, what were humans being used as? Their batteries.
Yeah.
Their energy cells. So now we're building large language models on the idea that humans on the internet, which is all monetized through advertising, on the idea that humans are the product. They're what's being sold.
Yeah.
So, like, we couldn't build a better system to build the Matrix than we do right now. So that's, like, the advertising thing. level is always going to be like, what's the goal? But one thing I do want to point out that might like loosely answer the question, because I've literally have an infinite amount of thoughts on this question, but is you'll notice if you go to like a Mr. Beast episode, you'll notice like deep in the comments, so people are like, what's wrong? Like, there's something off about him. There's something off about him. And what's off is he is the algorithm LARPing as a human, because he is doing exactly what the algorithm wants.
Yeah.
And it is working for him.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. I don't know if he's happy. It appears to be working for him. He's getting rewarded by the algorithm. But he has got such an intuition around the algorithm that he is now a human form of the algorithm. Yeah. And that, to me, is a fucking tragedy. Like, he's one of the most talented, skilled, ultimate respect, amazing dude. Grateful he's the guy doing it. But I don't want that life, and I don't... That's not art, mate. Fuck the algorithms for creating art. Art is the most important thing to me, and that is so not it. I would just keep building. Just keep building. He can't get advertisers because his audience is too big. I think he sells his ads at like $4 million an ad. In one ad spot. He did an ad for a competitor chocolate company. And that has honestly been very annoying to me because they haven't paid because they fucking spent so much money on that ad. But because he can't get anybody to buy his shit.
I think I listened to a lot of podcasts where he's, my only goal is to make the best videos possible. And sometimes I'm like, I don't know if the best video possible directly relates to the video that will get the most
views. It doesn't. No, it's totally wrong. Like, Shogun versus a Mr. Beast video? Are you fucking kidding me?
And that's why I'm like, yeah, he's adding more story elements. He's doing more storytelling now, building characters. He's doing better production. But I still don't think those two things match, like you said. No. Because he is optimizing for views, clicks, and he's figured out what the algorithm wants. He figured out how someone can click, what's the best thumbnail, what's the best title. And you're, again, to my earlier point, trying to game humans' attention versus truly attract their attention.
It's not beautiful at all. Like, it's not beautiful. It's just the lowest form of our attention. In a world of constant distraction, in a world of TikTok, do you want to be the thing that gets viewed the most and people forget about it 30 seconds later? Or do you want to be someone who changes people's lives?
Yeah.
I know people who got off heroin because they listened to Joe Rogan. That is insane. I know people who have lost tons of weight. People who have turned their lives around. Marriages are better because of Aubrey. That's why I asked, like, what was the goal of this, like, in podcaster person? Because for me, it's all about what we do with our time and our attention. Okay. And that's why I'm so grateful that people give attention to people listening. And thank you guys for listening right now. But if you outsource your authority, your sovereignty, your attention to the algorithm as a consumer, like, you are hurting yourself. And it is like, you're so much better than that. And you have so much more opportunity. And distraction is the thing that I'm most currently fundamentally scared of as I'm thinking about bringing a daughter into this world. I do not want to meme to her that I'm a distracted person.
Yeah. You said attention. It's a very stupid thing I do. I keep deleting my YouTube history every couple of weeks because I notice after a while, my feed becomes very repetitive, very what YouTube thinks I want to click on. They'll show me 4, 5, 6, 8-week-old podcast episodes because it matches whatever I listened to in the last week. And I started doing this because one day I opened my sister's phone. I didn't even know these videos were a thing.
Yeah.
Because you're so catered and locked into whatever your feed is.
Yeah.
Again, back to the whole algorithm attention thing. Yeah. I want to watch things that I resonate with. Yeah. And nowadays, if I don't like the topic, I don't like the person, I like most episodes, but I just won't watch an episode anymore. If I'm like, hey, I don't have anything, I'll save it. I'll put it in a to watch later. I'll see if it hits me sometime. But time and attention are very, like, key things.
It's like literally the most non-renewable resource, right? Like, Brian Johnson's doing his best, but like, it is fundamentally non-renewable, and we sell it at 0.02 cents per minute at the highest scale. It's more like 0.004 cents per minute on YouTube.
I do a couple random things at the end of every episode, a couple quick questions, and then what would you say is your support system?
I'm like this weird person who's just blessed to have like an insane amount of friends and grew up in like a very nice family situation. I almost have the problem of having too many friends. Like, it's hilarious. But
do you have like an inner circle?
Everyone's my inner circle, bro. Yeah, I just like assume good things in the world. I would say my wife is definitely like a massive support system, only because she believes in me more than I do myself, which is pretty high because I'm pretty confident. I mean, dude, people are amazing if you give them the shot to be. And I'm just always someone who's led with the heart and been open and vulnerable. So I don't feel like I need like some of my clients, they would put me as their support system.
Nice.
But they're like, even though they're in the public eye, they're like internally reserved. I'm just not that. Like, I'm just me.
What are three resources that you would recommend to someone listening in the podcast space who's either starting early, doing mm-hmm. something in the podcast space? And resources could be books, blogs, podcasts, whatever you recommend.
Yeah. I feel like I'm answering your questions badly, but I'm going to do it this way anyway. The best resource I could say for somebody who wants to be a podcaster is to go on a 12-hour silent walk.
Okay.
Go spend 12 hours alone. What it's about is developing an inner voice.
Why 12 hours?
It's just a challenging enough time period without a phone and without audio and without talking to people, but it's doable in a day. Slightly inconvenient. So it's like anybody can do that.
Yeah.
But it's slightly inconvenient. You end up like walking a marathon basically every time I've done it.
How many times have you done a 12 hours?
Do it every quarter since, I would say like probably four times now.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, it's been, I think it was 23. 22 and 23 to me are like really weird years. So I don't know. But yeah, tend to do it every quarter. A little late on this quarter, but yeah.
Second and third recommendation.
Okay, I'll just say this. Don't count this though. It's one of my second and third. It's like 1,000 True Fans by Kevin Kelly. That is a very important blog. The reason I don't want to use that is because it's just like overplayed, saying it. Read Old Chip. How do you get in the feed? By having interesting opinions, not just repeating other people's stuff. The worst thing you can do if you want to become a great podcaster is outsource your opinions to other podcasters. It's great to listen to understand how to think about turning pro, how to have a conversation, how to bring people in, like how to be like an actor on stage kind of thing. But don't get your opinions from other people. So read old books. Second one for sure. Like right now I'm reading a book on Yoshiwara, which was basically this area of Edo, which is now Tokyo, where like through the shogunate, the prostitutes were able to build a second class society. So it was like military, then it was merchant class and prostitutes. They were equal class. And so the culture of Edo was around pleasure. And I'm not just talking like prostitution. I'm talking from like just things that bring you pleasure, of like how somebody walks and moves, and their universities to like really rank up in that. So like, again, read old books. Third thing I would say would be to actually, this isn't necessarily a resource, but just like a tip of advice that you can use as a resource. Don't interview people you're not interested in. Actually be curious. Actually look at it as an opportunity to learn.
100%. What's your startup stack? So how do you run your company? How do you run your podcast? Do you have a set of tools that work for you and Joe Wall together?
Yeah. So my startup stack is who I've hired. And then we use a ton of technology as well. But really it is who I've hired. Hired people who believe in the cause, who do all the things I'm good at or bad at, sorry, all the things I'm bad at, and who are willing to like really figure it out. And then we use a ton of tools. So like we do all of our invoicing for Monday and like all of our like project management. We've integrated a lot of AI stuff as well, but like I do like having that human on the other side of it. Cause even, you know, like the algorithm, not to get algorithmic, but rewards people who press send versus if you use like a third party. So I'm probably making it sound like we have less of a system going. I'm just so out of it that I don't know. So I just trust the people that do
Makes sense.
I do pay for a lot of technology though. So I assume we have a lot of tech going on.
I like that. And last thing I do is I ask a guest a question for a future guest. So your question is, what drives you to do what you do?
It is the quote that you opened up. I want to live in a reality where our sense-making apparatus, the media, the things that like collect all of our thoughts and give opinions on, is incentivized by the people who listen to it, not by the people who buy it. Because as long as we live in that world, we will have chaos, and we are just increasingly going down that route. Like when Facebook and Google chose advertising as their business model of media, we have done nothing but incentivize a world that we don't actually want to live in. That's the same thing to the YouTube algorithm. We don't want to live in Mr. Beast video. Studio Ghibli. Miyazaki. I want to live in a Miyazaki film.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to live in a MrBeast video. Because, like, what they're doing is they're selling ads to us. As long as that's the reality, like, I want to live in a more beautiful world. I want to live in a world of artists. And I think AI can unlock that. I think a lot of things can unlock that. We have to change the incentive model of media.
Makes sense. What's your question for a future guest.
What's holding you back from the reality that you think could exist?
Thank you for coming on. Really good conversation. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
That was awesome. Thank you guys for your attention.
Thanks for tuning into Funds and Founders. If you're a local Austin founder, a venture capitalist, or just someone who's building and in the middle of their journey and would like to be featured on an upcoming episode, submit your guest pitch to abhinavsinha.podcast@gmail.com. If you have a founder-specific event you'd like to promote on the podcast, you can also reach out to me. If you want to continue to get support through your founder journey, hit the follow button and I'll see you in the next episode.